So, Jiva Goswami was discussing how the holy names of the Lord are different from material names, that the holy names of the Lord are describing the eternal, transcendental qualities and activities of the Supreme Lord, and the names themselves are eternal. The actual words, the syllables that make up the words of the holy names of the Lord are eternal. So we're continuing here from paragraph 4620. Tadyata Shrutau Om Asya Jananto Nama Chin Viviktana Mahaste Vishno Sumatim Bajamahe Om Tat Sat Ityadi. This is stated in Shruti. This is stated in Shruti. Om, O Vishnu, if we just utter your glorious, purely spiritual name with even slight understanding, we will partake of wisdom. Om Tat Sat. Ayam Artaha. Hey Vishnu, te tava nama chit chitsarupam ata eva mahak swapakasha rupam tasmad. Well, okay. This means, O Vishnu, your name is chit, or pure spirit, living pure. Living spirit, that's the meaning of chit. Therefore, your name is glorious, self-luminous, and so, okay. Tasmad asya nam naha isharapi janantaha natu samyag uchara mahatmyari purashkarena. Therefore, the name is glorious, self-luminous. And so even understanding this name only slightly, without prerequisite knowledge of the proper way to pronounce it, of its specific glories and so on. Okay. Ajananta, the prefix a, here means only slightly, ishat. Only slightly knowing the glories of the holy name, not properly knowing the names, even knowing exactly properly how to pronounce the names. Still, tatapi viviktana bruvanaha kevalam tad aksharabhyasa matram kurvanaha sumatim Tadvishayam vidyam bhajamahe prapnumaha. And moreover, merely uttering it, only going through the motions of speaking its syllables, we will share in or obtain higher knowledge about it, the holy name. Yatas tadeva pranava vyanjitam vastu sat swastak siddham iti. This is so because the entity indicated by the sound Om is self-manifest. This is a text, I think, from the Rig Veda, describing the glories of the syllable Om. das. Oh, I didn't read the Sanskrit. Ata eva baya dvesha dao shrimurte spurtir eva sankyetyadav api asya mukti datvam shriyate. Okay, and then Jiva Goswami comments, thus we hear from scripture that this name gives liberation even when spoken in reference to something else, or otherwise indirectly, just as the Supreme Lord shows his divine form even in response to fear, hatred, and other material emotions. Okay, I'm going to read the commentary. After the commentary, I'll open up for some questions, but please make the questions relevant. We have to try to stay online with the discussion that Jiva Goswami is presenting here. So I'll accept questions, but not questions that are going to take us off on tangents. We'll try that. Om is what we consider Gauna Nam. It's not describing the leelas or the personal qualities of Krishna or his expansions. It's got the potencies of the Lord within it, but it's not manifesting those personal qualities. But it's also considered a name of the Lord. It's Gauna Nam, secondary name. But it's praised in the Vedas. And we just read what the Rig Veda had to say about it. I don't have the references here. Okay. I'll read the commentary. Strict but non-devotional Brahmins may deny the authority of the Puranas, but they will never refuse to accept the authority of the Vedas. The Rig Veda has this to say about the holy name of Lord Vishnu. It is pure spirit. Okay, Om is a name of Vishnu. That's it, that we accept. So once we're talking about Om, then we're talking about the name of Vishnu. This Om is pure spirit, alive and conscious. That's what the Rig Veda tells us. It has the power to inspire wisdom in those who recite it. Living energy illuminates its vicinity. Okay. The body it resides in, and illuminates itself as well. A living being is conscious of himself even before being conscious of his body and environment. The Rig Veda passage cited here refers to the name Om, also called Pranava, the primeval vibration which is the seed of all language. As Srila Jiva indicates, the seed name Om hints at the personal qualities of Bhagavan, revealed in more explicit names. In material life, our minds and senses are out of touch with the spiritual realm, but we can become transformed by speaking the Supreme Lord's names, even only as an external exercise of the tongue. Even non-devotees who chant God's names without intending to are liberated from the repeated cycle of birth and death. Just as enemies of God's devotees who come into contact with the Lord or his image are saved from their demoniac illusions in spite of their reacting to the contact with anger or fear. So that is special potency of the actual names of God. You do not have to understand them completely. Just by hearing, especially by pronouncing them, they have great effect, even if this is done in ignorance. Other words, ordinary names, names of ordinary entities, do not have such potency. Other words are useful only when we understand the meaning. If we hear the words, we hear a foreign language that we don't know, it doesn't do us any good. We derive no understanding from that. But the names of the Lord, even if not understood, if they're heard and pronounced, then they will save us from the repeated cycle of birth and death. Okay, are there any questions on that? Yes, bro.
Just a broader question. Can you repeat a little bit the context of this Anuched and
how is? I said that at the beginning of the class, that the discussion is about the eternal nature of the Lord's names, that what they describe is eternal, and the names themselves are eternal, and therefore there is great spiritual benefit obtained from hearing and chanting these names. That's the context. Yes. Sorry, Gepapu.
It was said in the commentary that the holy name, that Om, the syllable Om, is the beginning of the manifesting personal qualities of the Lord, like a pigeon, like a seed. Does it mean that only just by chanting Om, we can also start, we can also get this understanding of personal features of the Lord?
Well, yes, you can begin your personal understanding. It's a beach mantra. Beach mantra is always there at the beginning of a beaches are chanted before the expanded mantra. So the potency is there in the beach mantra to begin the uncovering of our knowledge, like planting a seed. So, yes, the chanting of Om is recommended because it will help one become prepared for more explicit understanding of the personality of God. It is the name of the Lord. It's not just some energy. It's actually non-different from the Lord. But his personality is completely unmanifest in that form.
But in some way it's not complete. I mean that in order to understand completely Krishna, we have to chant his primary names like Krishna, Govinda, and so on.
It's the energy, the potency is completely there, but it's not revealed. It's hidden. So because the potencies and the personality remain hidden in that form, therefore meditation on that form of that sound, you can say it's an incomplete meditation, yes. Okay. Madan Mohan Prabhu.
It's on the same topic that Sarvagya Prabhu has just spoken about. I think that one of the names of the Lord is Sarvanama, that one who has all names as his.
Yes.
And how does it work exactly? Do we understand that he rents out those names to different objects and demigods, and then he can always repossess them if he wants? Like, and Indra, for instance, refers to Indra, not to him anymore, even though originally it was his name. But can he repossess the name and invest the name with the same potency as his primary names again? And does he ever do that?
Well, yes, the names, he still has a right to use the names that he's loaned to somebody else. He can be called Indra. To clarify it, he may be called Akindra. It may be modified. This is the real Indra. They're still his names, even though he's letting someone else use them. Okay? Yes, sir.
So the important part that Jiva Goswami is actually wanting to present here, just as a background of which he's presenting the rest, is that Om Tat Sat. So that is the part that he's quoting as evidence that it's eternal, because he wants to prove that it's eternal. Isn't it? That Om Tat Sat is the part that he's wanting to quote, which proves that the that the object.
He hasn't said anything about that part, though. He was commenting on the words in the part up to Om Tat Sat. He didn't say anything about Om Tat Sat. Yes, Om Tat Sat means that Om is eternal. It means that, but he didn't say that.
He said.
Yeah.
He says
where?
Tadeva pranava vyanjitam vastu svatasiddhamiti. It is self-manifest. In the last word, one line he says. So it looks like that is what he is actually wanting to bring up, and then the other part, just because it's relevant and it's along with it, so he presented it also. So the object indicated by Om is eternal. So yeah.
Well, yeah, I see that last sentence. Okay, but I don't think that what precedes it in that paragraph is unimportant. This is all explaining the actual potency of the name, especially the fact that Ajananta, even only realizing the holy name to a very slight extent, still can give you liberation. That's a very significant point. And that's what's said in the earlier part of that statement from the Rig Veda. Okay. Yes, Uddhava.
The Bija Mantra always indicate to Krishna, or sometime it will work on other demigods also?
Yes, it doesn't. No, not all the Bija Mantras are addressed to Vishnu. Yes, some of them, are the mantras belonging to demigods. Although you can say that all names originally are names of Vishnu, and therefore all Bij mantras also are originally Vishnu's. But the way they're used is many of them are addressing demigods. Okay. I think we should move on before we start going off on tangents. Okay. Jiva Goswami says, Tata Choktam Brahme. So he quotes from the Brahma Purana to substantiate what he's been talking about. Brahma Purana says, Apyanyachitta kudhova yaksada kirtaye darim sopi baddha kshayan muktim labe chedapatir yata. Oh, okay. That's a long... It is similarly stated in the Brahma Purana. One who always glorifies Hari, even inattentively or in anger, will certainly be freed from bondage and gain liberation, as did the king of Chedi. The king of Chedi, Shishupala, was obsessed with Krishna and was blaspheming him every opportunity he could get. So he was uttering the name of Krishna, but in a way to criticize and offend Krishna. Still, he got liberation from that. Continuing. It's a long, long paragraph here. Tata Sri Bhagavata Iva Tasya Namnak Sakridapi Sakshadkara Samsara Dvamsako Bhavati. Wow. Sorry, I'm just getting a little lost here. Thus, as being in the present, as being in the personal presence of the Supreme Lord destroys one's material entanglement, so also does being in the direct presence of His name, as according to the Skanda Purana, and then there's a quote from the Skanda Purana. yataskandi sakrid ucharitam yena haririt yaksharadvayam baddak parikarastena mokshaya gamanam prati. One who utters even once the two syllables Hari has tightened his belt for setting off on the path of liberation. Shutau cha pranavam udishya. And in reference to the syllable Om, there's a statement in Shruti. Om yetyetad brahmano nidishtam nama yasmad ucharyamana eva samsara boyat tarayati tasmad uchyate taraha ityadi bahutaram. Does anyone here have the text in front of him? Do you have the footnotes? Because the footnotes don't show here in my copy. Okay, we don't know what Shruti. Okay. Anyway, here's the translation. Om, this is the most intimate name of the Supreme. It is called Tara, because when uttered, it delivers one from the fears of material life. Nachasyarta vada tvam chintiyam tatrarta vado harinam ni kalpanam iti padma puran anusarena aparad apatat. There are many statements like this in the Vedas which should not be considered exaggerated glorification, artavada. According to the Purvi Mimamsa school, the only really important and significant part of the Vedas are the actual injunctions that one should do in performing sacrifices. And the other statements that aren't giving injunctions are secondary. And a large part of that is what is called artavada, or just glorification. So, exaggerated glorification is my translation of artavada. One shouldn't think that the statements in the Shruti, in the Vedas, are telling us about the glories of the holy names of the Lord, that they are just artavada, just some exaggerated glorification. Because that would involve one in the offense described by the Padma Purana, also presuming that the glorification of the name of Hari is exaggeration. That's one of the 10 offenses against the holy name. What is it? The words in Sanskrit are Tatrartavaro Harinam Ni Kalpanam. Giving some money. No. This is the 8th offense. How's the Dad Prabhupada say it? 6th offense. Considering the glories of the holy name to be imagination. Give some that the mundane interpretation is artavada. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so to say that those statements of the Shruti that tell us about the glories of the holy name, that they are just exaggerated praise, that's an offense against the holy name to say that. Yasya tu grihita namno pi punak samsaras tu tasya nanu vrajati yo mohad vrajantam parameshwaram gyanagdi dagda karma pi sabavediti brahmava rakshasaha iti Sri Vishnu Bhakti Chandrodayadi pramanita purana vachanavat Mahad aparada tadarta vada kalpanadikam pratibandakam gyeyam. If, even after someone has taken this name He continues in the cycle of birth and death. We should understand that his progress must be obstructed by some great offense. Just as thinking the glories of the Lord's name to be exaggerated praise. That's an offense. So that offense or some other offense is the reason why, even though you're chanting the holy names of the Lord, you're still in the material world. Sri Vishnu Bhakti Chandrodaya cites this statement from the Puranas, which we're going to read. And there are others to the same effect, other statements also. The statement from the... Anyway, the statement that the Vishnu Bhakti Chandrodaya quotes from the Puranas is, "One who out of delusion fails to follow the Supreme Lord when he is in unprocession will become a Brahma Rakshasa, even if all of his karma has been burned away by the fire of knowledge." So someone may be a gyani. He may have be very elevated, apparently, in spiritual life. But if he commits an offense against the deity of the Lord by refusing to follow it in procession, he's committing an aparad against the deity, and he's going to become a Brahma Rakshasa. So that's parallel to the idea that if one commits offense against the holy name of the Lord, then he doesn't get easily the results of chanting the holy name. Those effects of liberation and so on are blocked, they're obstructed by the offenses. Okay, I'll read the commentary. Shishupala, the king of Chedi, was delivered from material existence, although all his life he hated Krishna with a passion. What saved him was his being often in personal contact with Krishna. Despite his hatred, he eventually could not help but become attracted to Krishna's beauty and wonderful qualities. The Vishnu Dharmottara Purana describes that at the very moment Krishna's Sudarshana disc was coming to cut off his head, Shishupala, staring at Krishna one last time, at that moment that his head was about to be cut off, finally felt pure attraction to him, to Krishna. Thus, by envying Krishna, he got the liberation for which gyanis, yogis, and bhaktas aspire for after many lifetimes. This is the third time he's been killed by Krishna. But finally, he's become attracted to Krishna in the third life, when Krishna, in his original form, is cutting off his head. The holy name of the Supreme Lord can bestow its influence even chanted just once, but it must be actually present. The chanting can be in ignorance, ajananta, hardly knowing what one is doing. But it should be offenseless, as was Ajamil's chanting the name Narayan at the point of death. Committing offenses against the Lord's name postpones the liberation automatically earned by chanting the name even once. In offensive chanting, the divine name is not directly present. In offensive chanting, the name is hidden, let's say. It's hiding. The Brahma Purana recommends, Sada Kirtayet, that one should constantly practice chanting. This practice, if continued as long as required, will raise one from even offensive chanting to the stage of namabhasa, shadow chanting, which is without love and realization, but at least is inoffensive. The term artavada originated in the Mimamsa schools' theory of interpreting the Vedas. It means exaggeration spoken to stimulate faith, as in promises of benefits from performing certain sacrifices. Apama somam amrita abhuma That is from the Rig Veda 8.43.3. We have drunk the soma juice and have become immortal. That's an example of an artavada. It's an exaggeration because you don't really become immortal, even by drinking soma juice. Mimamsakas consider glorification of gods to be mere artavada, only marginally relevant to the real significance of the Vedas, which they take to be promotion of the performance of duty. Promotion of the performance of duty. Okay, that's the purpose, is to promote the performance of duty, especially in the form of ritual sacrifices. The Padma Purana, however, declares it an offense to consider the glories of the Supreme Lord's name such mere artavada. The Vedas and Puranas do not lie when they say, in what they say in praise of the holy names of the Lord is all true. If someone who tries chanting is seen to not benefit as promised by the texts, he must have committed while practicing serious offenses, or have accumulated an excess of small offenses. Offenses against the Supreme Lord, his devotees, and his names have very serious reactions. Even the slighter offense of not following the deity of Vishnu on procession, something that a busy person might easily do, creates the reaction of a miserable rebirth. The offense will have its retribution even for one whose reactions of all past sins have been burned to ashes. Who has earned liberation, this person has earned liberation only to lose it again by neglecting the Lord's deity. Okay, any questions? Madan Mohanpur.
A question about Shishupal's.
Okay, turn.
Hare Krishna. I also heard a statement from some other Purana about the same thing about Hiranyakashipu when he was just about to get killed by Narasimhadev, when he lay his paws on his chest, on his hands, on his chest, and that very moment he became purified and he developed love of Krishna. I'm not sure about Ravana when he was killed by Rama.
Where is that said about?
About Hiranyakashipu?
Because, you see, Rupa Goswami in the Lago Bhagavatamrita is discussing this extended passage from the Vishnu Dharmottara Purana to make the point that only Krishna's original form gives liberation to the demons he kills. That when in his previous life the same demon was Ravana, he didn't get liberation. He only got a better birth, you know, as Shishupal. Not a more opulent birth, but a birth with a better opportunity to associate with the Lord. Only when he got killed as Shishupal by Krishna directly did he get his final liberation. So I don't know about Hiranyakashipu, because he had to take birth again. He also took three births, and that was only the first one. He didn't get liberation in the first one. He took two more births. So I don't know about that attaining love of God. If he had attained the love of God, he would have been freed. So where's that statement from?
The same.
Well, I mean, the Vishnu Dharmottara is saying that in the previous two births, Shishupal didn't attain love of God. He only attained it at the last minute.
I can't quote it, actually. I'm sorry.
Okay, we can look at it.
Yeah, we can look at it.
But it would, if it's the Vishnu Dharmottara, it would be contradicting itself there.
Yeah, that's right. And second question about Mimamsaka Sargin, that yes, some statements of the Vedas are exaggerations which are meant to increase our faith. I just wonder if we could argue against it, saying that if we accept that, then it will we will lapse into indefinite regression, because then we could also say that faith in what? In sacrifices, but maybe the sacrifices are also exaggerations, and the results they're promised, even heavenly plans are also exaggerations, and it all ends up being all very optional and very relative and very tentative. And the ultimate point of the Vedas can always be doubted, or explained away as a mere exaggeration. Can we argue like that again?
You can argue, but then we're getting into the argument between the two schools of Purva Mimamsa and Uttara Mimamsa. But it's an axiom of the Purva Mimamsa that the real purpose of the Vedas is to tell us what to do. You know, that the Chodana Dharma, the very second sutra of the Purva Mimamsa sutras, Dharma Chodana Lakshana, what Dharma is basically the injunctions of the Vedas. Chodana, telling us what to do. So you're getting into an argument over the basic axioms of that school, which is a significant debate, but I think it's not what we're dealing with here.
But can we also use it as a criterion to judge whose approach to the Vedas is better, like the Occam's razor, saying that whoever takes less interpretations, less figurative interpretations of the text, is probably the closest to the truth?
Okay, well, let's put that off, because I think that's not, you know, it's not the topic under discussion. It's important, it's significant, but we have to discuss that some other place. And one, two, three. Yes. Sorry, Gepro.
This question is about offense of following this procession of deities. In Mayapur, we used to have this riksha with deities, Shishigur Nitai, and then Harinama Party. So, what should be proper behavior one who sees this Harinama Party coming nearby? Shall he just follow this procession for some time? I saw few devotees from Gaudiya Math.
That may mean putting aside your duty. Your service.
Yeah.
You're doing devotional service. That's, I think that's different. We're talking, the verse that defined that offense was talking about a jnani, not about a devotee. Mm-hmm. So if you have some other obligation in the service of the same Lord who's on procession, then you got to do your service. Mm-hmm. Not that everybody, you know, drops everything and runs after the deity. Mm-hmm.
But if you're not engaged, if you're free, so...
If you're free, then...
And you doesn't follow this position...
Why are you free? The question would be, why are you idle? Why are you sitting around with no service? Then you better go on some procession or something.
Thank you.
Related question. It's like, for example, we have Ratha Yatra. And we bring Jagannath Baladev Subhadra on procession.
Yes.
So everybody that looks at Jagannath but doesn't come on procession becomes a Brahma Hakshasha. And then, is this an exaggeration? Is this an exaggeration? Is that one will become a Brahma Hakshasha?
Lord Jagannath's very merciful. So, although I guess according to the letter of the law, they're all condemned to become Rakshasas, Brahma Rakshasas. I think Lord Jagannath gives them his mercy anyway. Yeah, he just mitigates. I'm sure he's very happy that the people see him on procession, even if they don't follow. That's a special case.
It's like this verse also says, Gyanagni Dagna Karma Pi. Even though one's karma is... burned up by the desire, is like eradicated by the fire of knowledge. So does that just apply to those who have their karma purified from the fire of knowledge? That means like...
Well, I'm not sure. You know? You could say that an ignorant person who just doesn't know any better, doesn't follow the deity, nobody ever told them he's supposed to.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't apply to such a person. But especially someone who knows better. Who knows that you're supposed to follow the deity when he's on procession and doesn't do it, because he thinks he has something more important.
But it says mohat because of illusion.
Yeah. Right, but that's moha means you have knowledge and it's covered. It's not the same as never being informed about it. That's one idea. Maybe everybody's going to go to become a Brahma Rakshasa. I don't know. But it seems like we're talking especially about a person who knows better and finds an excuse not to follow the deity. Okay. Anything else?
About this, Prabhuji, that verse, it especially makes this word mohat because of
moha,
illusion.
Yeah. Yes. So I'm taking moha to mean, confusion, not based out of sheer ignorance, but you know something, but your knowledge is covered over.
I had one question about this Mimamsaka.
Yeah.
I wanted to know clearly what is their stance about Arthavada. Is it that they are very pig-headedly saying that Arthavadas are wrong, or are they saying that sometimes they may be true or something? It's not necessary.
No, they're not denying the truth of Arthavada. They're just saying that this is just, it's not the essence of the Vedas. And a lot of times it's exaggeration. It can't be taken literally, the Arthavada. But it serves its purpose because it inspires one to do his duty. And that's the real purpose of the Vedas. So it has a secondary value. But its truth value may also be only secondary, maybe figurative. Like the stance of glorification of the demigods is there all over the Veda Samhitas, Rig Veda especially. Plenty of glorification of all kinds of deities. But the stance on the Mimamsakas about that is that the value of such glorification is just to get people to do sacrifices. Whether the demigods even exist or not is not important. So it's possible they don't even exist, in which case it's total exaggeration, glorifying non-existent demigods. But the poor imam says that we don't care whether they exist or not. Just the Arthavada serves its purpose anyway.
In some Vaishnava schools, they consider this Puru Mimamsa also as an authorized
Sri Vaishnavas, yes. But it must be properly interpreted. What Jaimini says, we can accept. But what the later commentators, beginning with Shabara, made out of Jaimini, we have to correct.
So if it's not necessary that all the Arthavadas are wrong, all the Arthavadas are false, then...
No, but we're not saying... The Mimamsakas are not saying that the Arthavada is false. They're saying that the truth of them is only relative and of secondary importance.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, we move into 46.22. Atta eva... Ananda rupatvam asya mahad dridaya sakshikam yata shri vigrahasya taduktam shri shaunakena. So it is that the hearts of great souls testify to the blissful nature of the Lord's name. The Lord's name is eternal. Now we're saying it's blissful. And we know that from the testimony of great devotees. Just as they testify to the blissful nature of his divine body. Sri Shonaka expresses this in the following words. Shonaka Rishi says, Tadashma saram vidayam batedam yad grihyamanayar harinama deyai navikriyetata yadavikaro netre jalam gatra ruheshu harsha. Certainly that heart is steel-framed, which in spite of one's chanting the holy name of the Lord with concentration, does not change and feel ecstasy, at which time tears fill the eyes and the hairs stand on end. Okay, that's a statement from the Bhavatam from Shonaka Rishi. And also... Ata eva prabhasa purane kantoktya katitayar hetubi Sakala Veda Palatvena Cha Bhagavat Swarupatvam Eva Pratipaditam. Thus the Prabhasa Purana. Prabhasa Purana is just the Prabhasa Kanda of the Skanda Purana. Thus the Prabhasa Purana demonstrates with explicit references, with explicit reasons rather, that the Supreme Lord's name is the fruit of all the Vedas, and therefore identical with the Lord Himself. One second. Where is it? There. I'm sorry, I'm just learning how to use this. Okay. The Prabhasa Purana demonstrates with explicit reasons that the Supreme Lord's name is the fruit of all the Vedas and therefore identical with the Lord Himself. This name, Krishna. Oh, I didn't read the Sanskrit. Okay. Hare Krishna. Marura Maruram Etan Mangalam Mangalanam. Sakala nigama valli satpalam chit swarupam sakridabhi parigitam helaya shradayava bhriguvara naramatram tarayet krishna nama iti. So this is the Prabhasa Kanda saying, this name Krishna is the sweetest of the sweet, the most auspicious of all auspicious things. It is the perfect fruit of the creeper of the entire Vedic Shruti. In essence, it is pure living spirit. O best of the Bhrigus, any human being who just chants this name even once, whether with faith or neglectfully, will become liberated. This was also quoted earlier in the Tattva Sandarbha. And here's the commentary. Having cited the Rig Veda and a few Puranas as supporting authorities for the glories of the Supreme Lord's names, now great devotees are also cited. Noble persons speak from their hearts, honestly and frankly. They never speak to manipulate or deceive. The unidentified devotee of Lord Vishnu talking in the verse cited here from the Prabhasa Purana, otherwise known as the Prabhasa Kanda of the Skanda Purana. Okay, we don't know who's saying this, it's some devotee. He mentions four reasons to consider the Lord's names the ripened fruit of the Vedas and identical with the Lord. The names, here's the four reasons. The names are more sweet than anything else, just as the Lord Himself is. Also, two, like him, they are the most auspicious of all auspicious things. Third reason is they are all pure spiritual energy of the Lord. And fourth reason, and they can liberate anyone by even slight contact. Okay, that's the commentary. Any questions? Let me try to save the file. Okay, if no questions, I will stop for now. That was, what was the number of the section we just read? 22? Okay, so we start with 23. Okay, thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.